Good afternoon. Welcome to this segment of Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh, and today my guest is Van Calhoun, a member of the Hudson Athens Lighthouse Preservation Society and Restoration Committee Chairperson. And he is here to talk about repairs that are being done on the lighthouse or to get it stabilized. And so welcome, Van.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. And so what exactly, you know, is being done and, you know, the need for it?
Well, let's start with the need for it question first. It celebrated the Hudson Athens Lighthouse. Years ago, it was called the Hudson Light. And coincidentally, it's funny because it faced the Athens side for the first 50 years of its life, almost. And that's why the bell tower faces the Athens side. But the Corps of Engineers decided to change the channel to the Hudson side. And our bell still faces the Athens side in our tower. And it was called Hudson City Light for a while. And now it's Hudson Athens Lighthouse. And, of course, it's still an effective and operating aid to navigation. It has a green light on it. So it's an important part of the safety on the Hudson River. Well, last year it celebrated its 150th anniversary. It was begun in 1872 after Congress finally appropriated the funds, having first known that they needed it and designated the program to build lighthouses on the upper Hudson River as far back as about 1845. In fact, that's the period when the Swallow ran aground in the north of Middle Ground Flats Island and killed 17 people. And they were having boat trials, running people back to New York as fast as they could and couldn't see, hit the northern end of the island because the island didn't exist in those days. It was just a sandbar. So in 1872, the construction began. In 1874, it was finished. It's an extremely unique setting. That lighthouse has no ground around it. If you notice, the concrete, the granite blocks go right down, plunge right down into the water.
Right, yeah.
And they sit on 200 wooden pilings.
Okay.
And those wooden pilings were pounded down to the top of the river bottom, and then a wooden floor was built on top of it, right in the water, of 12 by 12 oak on 2 foot centers crosswise, so two wooden floors. And then the blocks were laid on top of that. So all of that was sitting on the river bottom at that time. And then over the course of years and the channel being changed and the heavy traffic from ships and barge traffic and the bigger ships. And, you know, we have huge 750-foot ocean-going vessels that come up the river.
Yeah, that wasn't thought of in the 1870s, I'm sure.
It wasn't thought of. Didn't have those size of boats causing that size of hydraulic action under the water, which is large. Consequently, over those 150 years, but especially after the last 50 and especially the last 20 years, the soil has been being sucked out from under the lighthouse to the point that now it sits on a little mountain. And the big boulders as big as cars that used to be all around it on the Hudson side have disappeared entirely. They've rolled down into the channel under the water, and they're gone from the foundation.
Oh,
but not only they are gone, we have the timbers that should be completely exposed in the river mud to protect them from oxygenation and therefore rot over time. At the leading edge, they're now exposed 10 feet in the water. And they've increased 2 foot exposure in the last 4 years. We've just had the divers down testing it. So I'm getting at this a little bit of backwards way. We know we had a very serious job to protect it. And we decided, this board decided to take the 100-year fix and do something that will keep this here for 100 more years of the citizens of Athens in Hudson. And that will be to build a wall around it. But it would take us some time, when we decided this in 2020, take us some time to get the plan together, do the research, do the science, get the engineers, start getting the money. And so what we needed to do in the meantime was to protect the house.
Sure.
The beautiful Queen Anne, second century Victorian, that sits on top. So we were able to qualify for a New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation grant for $500,000, a matching $160,000 for us. And we began our roof project this last last year we put the pieces in place, accepted the bids. This year we put it into play. And we've torn off the entire roofing and all the slate shingles on the sides now. Okay. If you've been on the river, you've noticed it's completely surrounded with heavy-duty scaffolding so the crew can work up there. And we're replacing the slates, replacing the damaged wood, repointing the brick, and putting all new lead-coated copper roofing on the tops of the dormers and all. And that will be to protect the house for a number of more years. We're not going to finish the house on the brickwork on the outside or the severely cracked plaster on the inside until after we do the foundation. But in the meantime, we were able to apply for a second grant and get the funding to do the actual engineering work and pre-design for building a curtain wall all around it. And that's next. And so that's underway as we speak. But we also campaigned very hard with our local communities, our legislators, all of them in a bipartisan manner. And we were able to get on in the radar of the Army Corps of Engineers, who last year did a study to see that actually the remediation of the lighthouse was their purview. It was under their jurisdiction to do. Number one, they decided it was. And number two, they decided it was feasible. The plan we submitted to them was feasible. And so as of January of this year, they began taking over the project of building the wall around the lighthouse. And that's tremendous because we had the plan, but we didn't have the wherewithal yet in play. So that's what's going on, and that's the reason why it has to go on.
I see. Yeah, we hate to lose that landmark.
No.
My gosh. And I did a program on it a few years back, too. So, yeah. And I actually took it, I think it was about 3 years ago, I took a tour of it.
Oh,
one
good.
One Saturday. I'd never been out to it. I said, I picked a nice day. I said, I got to go out and see this, you know. And I really enjoyed it.
You know, we've been giving tours over the last 5 years. Yeah. We've contracted with the Hudson Ferry Company to bring people out for free on Waterfront Wednesdays out of Hudson and Thursdays, I think, out of Athens. And then on the weekends, we had been running our professional type tours with our docents and a full 40-minute walk around.
Yes, I did.
But this year we have to. We've had to stop the tours because of the work that's going. We can't actually physically get people on the lighthouse right now.
Right.
And hopefully we'll be back in the middle of September or the end. We'll be able to start some form of tour up again. We hope.
Okay, that'd be great. Give more people a chance to see that now. I know there was a mishap a few weeks ago, shall we say, that might affect this project a little bit.
Yeah, we had, as you know, the Hudson River is a busy river because we have a lot of industry on the river, all the way from New York to Albany. Albany is an international seaport, so there are materials running up in the river and down the river on barge configurations and cargo ships, large cargo ships. And we call those folks the Navigation Channel beneficiaries. Yeah, they're the guys who use the channel and benefit from it, and our communities benefit from it because our people work there and unload the goods and fill the boats and man the boats. So one of our Navigation Channel beneficiaries ran askew and somehow got out of the channel in kind of a sear way with a tech boat and a push of seven barges, and had trouble renegotiating to get back into the channel, and came in contact with us, fairly severe contact with us.
Yeah.
It was not a head-on collision, if you want to use an automobile analogy, because that would have knocked the pier right off of our building, and we'd be in sorrowful shape. But it's kind of a glancing blow. Okay. It wiped off our hardware, our dock and our stair gangway. Mm-hmm. That much we could see. Now, we're in the middle now of conducting our testing and our reviews. We've had underwater divers there. We've had the engineers checking the foundation blocks, and we'll be having LIDAR back, underwater survey using the LIDAR radar technique. Yeah. And that should happen in the next week or two, if we're lucky, because it will determine the extent of the block damage that we've had. We have had quite severe block movement on the north point and the southeast corner from the ramming. Picture this multi-ton granite block being moved 3 inches out of place. And so we don't know what that the ramifications of that will be, and we were finding that out now.
How much of a delay will that, you know,
cause? Couldn't put a price tag on it yet. This is something that's got to be clearly thought out, because the immediate impact that you can see with such large forces as these can transfer into other movement that you can't see, especially on the inside of something like this. And whether we have to address that now before we start our foundation work with the Corps of Engineers and it'll hold that up, or whether we get to include that with the Corps of Engineers, we don't know. So we really don't know how to put any dollar amount to that right now.
I see. I mean, as far as timing, that delay of completion, or?
We are not, there's no plan in place to start work yet, although we have been hoping that the Corps of Engineers would start work in the spring of 2026. The plan is not yet complete, but it should be soon. So we're not being held up in that respect with the foundation at this point. If that was to change how the Corps of Engineers viewed the project or the timing of it, that would be scary, because we only have 3 or 4 years left of taking care of getting this wall built before we're going to lose all the soil underneath, and then we'll get failure someplace. And so if this incident is causing us to set back from that cause, that would be a big problem.
I see that. Is there anything, let me say this. Is there anything the public can do to help, like as far as donations or?
Well, they certainly, if you haven't visited our website, it's fascinating. It's got all the pictures, the bathymetric pictures of underneath the lighthouse, and you can actually see a video how they run around it underwater, and then there are video replications of all our pilings and where the soil has gone. It's quite fascinating. And we have a lot of other interesting photographs and videos of the lighthouse, how it came to pass, the history of it. Please visit that. I think you'd get extremely enthused. And certainly we can always embrace donations. We really need members as well, people who are interested, just interested in lighthouses and helping out. We're still going to be doing our tours on the outside of the lighthouse in terms of the boat circling around and giving lectures on what's happening.
Okay, that was another question. Are there any events coming up?
And we will have more events starting in the fall again. So be of interest. Talk it up with your neighbors. Come out if you can, and certainly make a donation if you can.
Right, okay. Now, we have a little time here left. I'm just about halfway through here. How did you get involved in the – how long have you been with the society?
I've been 6 going on 7 years now. Okay. I was involved in other projects on the river. I was in the last couple of years when the historic replica ship Half Moon was on the river, the big old square rigger that Henry Hudson would have sailed up on in 1609. So when I retired, I got involved in that project, and ultimately I became a ship's engineer on the last voyage of discovery, where they would take 20 international school kids down to New York and come back again. It was a fascinating educational week. They taught a lot of navigation, environment, seamanship, line handling, and all those kinds of things. So, and then I helped accompany that the Half Moon out to Boston Harbor, up to Melville, north of Newport, demast it and see it lifted onto a big ship and taken across the ocean. Ultimately to Amsterdam, and then was flown over there to help recommission the ship, put it back in the shape, and we delivered it to the Horn Westries Museum north of Amsterdam, and they had the ship for 5 years. So I needed another ship, and then I worked on the little historic replica of the Onrus, the first sailing ship built on American shores in 1613. The Onrusta was a little 85-foot ship, but it had sailed across, and then through arguments or whatever, it was burned to the waterline. Oh, yes. And the winter came, but they rebuilt it with native timber and wood, and they sailed it that spring. So I captained on that a little bit, taking it up and down the river to its various places from Kingston to Troy. And then we that boat was given to the Connecticut River Maritime Museum in Essex. So I helped take that boat down, and then I had no boats at all. And I love the boats. I own a boat. My wife and I own an old World War II steel tugboat. But I went to an open house in the Hudson Library that the lighthouse had given for volunteers, and I got hooked, and I said, I have a Coast Guard captain's license, and I said, I just want to drive the little boat to take people out to the lighthouse and back. That's all I want to do. I don't want any responsibility.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, so I got to do what I wanted to do about the first year. Next thing it was, could you be on this committee? And next thing, do you want to do this? And lo and behold, now it's up like 20 hours a week. Wow. It's a labor of love.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, extremely rewarding. When you get out to that lighthouse and you realize that a family of six lived on this lighthouse for 11 years, and the Brenner family was from Athens, and the children were raised there, a child was born there, and what it must have been like for them and the stories that are told. The children still had to go to school. Father rode them to school every day.
Across the ice. I
mean, and in the wintertime, they had to go across the ice. And he would sometimes take an oar and pull with him. But there's another story about him. He was a tobacco chewer. So he would go ahead of the kids, and he'd spit to the left and to the right and tell the children to walk between the spittoon marks to get to shore. It's just fabulous. And think about the kids playing on that lighthouse and the stories. Yeah. Anyhow, there's an awful lot that just hooks you. It's romantic in a way. Yeah. You get to go up to that tower all by yourself and look out and think about what it was like in 1874 when still steamships and paddle wheelers were coming up the river.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting.
And I know that had to be a lot of work that the keepers had to do, because I know I found that years ago, before I even got into history stuff, I used to work with somebody who was just a fan of like lighthouses. Anytime I would go on vacation, I'd bring back pictures or something. I went to the Outer Banks. Hey, Roberta, here's this one. And yeah, she had books, I think Mary Higgins Clark or something. Anyway, our magazine about what they had to do. I mean, like cleaning the lenses and all this, and
sure,
the rolled up newspaper.
Yeah, in the early days, they had the lens was called a Fresnel lens, mm-hmm. and it was actually a compilation of hundreds or thousands almost of crystals, mm-hmm. Really beautiful special crystals, and they magnified the light that came out from what originally was just the first ones were whale oil in the 1840s and 50s until petroleum was discovered, and then they became kerosene lamp oil, which is basically kerosene. But the lightkeeper had to haul that stuff up in 5-gallon buckets all the way up four flights of stairs to the very top and keep it filled and keep it lit all the time, keep the lens clean. And then, in lighthouses, you had to make sure the shades were covered in the summertime with the sunlight, because you could scald your skin from all of that. It's like holding a magnifying glass up for the sun.
Oh, my goodness.
But the worst part of the job, really, was when fog came. So you couldn't see the light. Well, what did you have to ring the bell? And our lighthouse had an original bell, and then in 1890, another bigger bell was put on by the American Lighthouse Association, I think it was. I think I'll correct myself in a minute.
Okay.
And that had an automatic bell ringing mechanism that was the same one that was used for fire companies in New York City. And you could set timers for it, and you could set schedules. So the lighthouse keeper would set that bell, and it could ring the huge bing, every 30 seconds. So you're and your family are in that lighthouse trying to sleep all night long. And that thing is wound up and goes every 30 seconds. Oh, yeah. And I couldn't imagine
somebody's
going
to be sleeping. Oh, my God.
So our plan,
okay,
ultimately,
yes,
when we get that curtain wall around, the curtain wall is the pilings. And those pilings, by the way, are going to be driven down in the water, which is 20 to 40 feet deep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and by the way, when it was built, the water was 20 feet deep all around the lighthouse. But now, because of all that scour that I've been talking about, on both sides, it's 40 feet deep right off the lighthouse. That very deep. It drops off very, very quickly. So the wall that we'll build around will contain all of that, maybe be slightly larger in size, because our only ownership is a 100-foot diameter circle under the water. That's okay. The only land that we own. But when we bring this new round container up around our sides, we'll be infilling it with river mud, basically, and packing back in around to protect all of those pilings. Okay. And we'll be able to build it up. We're going to build it 5 feet higher than it is now for sea level rise. But that'll give us land. We'll actually have land to get off and to walk on around the lighthouse. Not football field size of land, but... four kind of half moons around it that we'll be able to do more programming and have events, and it'll change our ability to put in some kind of domestic sanitary system so that we could entertain people staying over at nighttime. Yeah, and we've actually already done a lot of weddings, and we had several we had to turn away this year, but do more of weddings. And we also, up until this year, have brought about 300 school kids out there in the spring from both the Catskill School and the Hudson Schools, mm-hmm. usually fifth graders, who absolutely love it. And many of these kids who live in these two communities have barely been down to the river, never on the water, and never down at the lighthouse. So this is a grand educational experience for them.
I love that, because I like hearing you get the younger generation involved in like local history and things like this. Otherwise, you know, eventually you'll fade out.
Well, we did a couple of presentations last year. One was at Hudson High School for the same fifth grade class. They were fifth graders, and they chatty and talky and talking, and the questions they listened. And then we went to give a presentation, and school had ended by now, to the senior art class. And we were amazed. We got there to the room. There were 35 kids who voluntarily came after school to see this presentation in the lighthouse. And their teachers said, you know, they're senior high schoolers. They'd probably be on their phones, probably be talking. Don't be dissuaded by that. And we started to talk and show our plan and ask questions. There was nothing but rapt attention by all these seniors.
Beautiful.
It was quiet and attention, and kids ask a lot of questions. And I ask, how many of you have been to the lighthouse? Every one of them raised their hand. And I said, when were you there? They were all there in fifth grade.
Oh, my goodness.
And they all remembered it, and it all still had a special place, and they were relating other things that had happened in their life to the lighthouse. Mm-hmm. And that told me that the program was extremely valuable.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, that's great. That's wonderful to hear. Okay, we're just about the end here. I want to mention the new schedule for this for Backtracks in Time as well. Let me do that first. Everybody, Backtracks in Time has been kind of sporadic the last couple of years, but I just want to let people know who are listening that it is going to be airing the 5th Friday of the month at 4:30. So it'll be, I think I'm doing 3 shows this year. This being the first one. And the next one will be on August 29th. With a subject yet to be decided. So I hope everybody, just want everybody to know that we are back on a regular schedule. So thank you very much. And thank you, Van, for being here. Appreciate your time and your knowledge on this. And
we thank you very much for having us too, Jack.
My pleasure. So again, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a wonderful day.